6 never, ever marks the spot.
I am altering the deep. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier.
I'm Batman.
Dracarys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Top 5 Report. The podcast hopes that someday LEGO will reach out to us to make a video game of our show. I'm pretty sure we'd call it LEGO Top 5 Report, Legacy of a Podcast. My name is Drew. I'll be your host for the evening. Along with me, as always, my brother Peter. How are you, sir?
Here, apparently.
Apparently, all right.
No, that's pretty awesome. I look forward to hearing from LEGO.
Yeah, I know, right? Me too. How's your week been, man?
It's been pretty good. Nothing too crazy going on. How about you?
The normal. And I hate to say the normal because it's like, what is the normal? You know, ball games and barbecues. No, this is beginning of summer. The weather's actually decent for a change. It's not too hot yet, in my opinion. So
yeah, it's been awesome. Keep going.
They don't want to listen to us talk about the weather, so unless you had something to add.
I stopped myself. I was about to like go into more descriptions about the weather, and I'm like, this is not what the people want to hear. So yeah, keep going.
At any rate, we can talk about normal things. What you watch this week?
Yeah, so my watching is pretty light. I really only watched this pretty big movie that came out this weekend, and Drew, I know you did as well. I don't know if you have other stuff you want to get into or if you want to get into that big review right away.
Cool. So Peter is referring to The Mandalorian and Grogu, and yes, I did watch that, so we'll jump on that in just a brief second. I do have a couple things.
Okay, cool.
First, I did watch, I've started season 2 of Monarch, which has kind of been on my list for a little bit. Did you watch the first season of Monarch?
Yeah, so I was watching it a lot, and I fell off at some point, and it was actually just the other night we started watching it again. So,
okay. Are you in season 2?
I'm on like episode 9 or 10 of the first season. I don't know how many episodes there are, so I think I'm getting close. I want to say
it's 10 a season. Nice. So you're right there. The season 2 is fantastic thus far, so no complaints. I'm not done. I have 3 episodes left to the end of the season. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, exciting stuff. Sweet. That was one I was jumping on, but I wanted to wait. I wanted it to stack because I didn't want to like, oh crap, I have to wait another week. So, I wanted to let it build. So I did not jump on it until late, but yeah, so season 2 is done and I've just got a couple more episodes. So far it's fantastic. Awesome. Lots of kaiju nonsense, which is really what you want sometimes, right?
Absolutely.
My attention has been, very focused on LEGO Batman Legacy of the Dark Knight. It is wonderful in so many ways, and it's basically the LEGO game. This is one of those things where a company knows what the source material is, and they know what the source material is for their universe. So it's Batman in one of the best representations of Batman done in LEGO, and it's amazing. I don't know if you've seen trailers, Pete, but the trailers show a lot of footage from the movies. And it made me think to myself, oh, we're straight playing the movies, right? That's not really what's happening. This is an original story where it makes reference to the movies. Like the first hour of the game, hour and a half, depending on how long you poke around and look at stuff, covers the Wayne murder, Bruce going off to Nanda Parbat and training with the League of Shadows and coming back to Gotham and first night out as Batman.
Nice.
It's crazy. That's like the first hour. Like, you don't get to be Batman for quite some time because you're training with the League of Shadows, and they're using the League of Shadow training to give you your video game tutorial to teach you how to do things, right? So you're learning all the how to do silent do the stealth takedowns and how the combat works and use all your different gadgets, and it's really cool how they put it together. And when you come back first night out, the very first car they give you is the Batman Batmobile, which is very much like a normal looking car. It would make sense for you to have that right off the bat. And then you get that suit to start because that's very year one. And then you have, it's literally like a couple sequences from the Batman, like going into Iceberg Lounge and stuff. And then it goes off on its own thing. And it's this whole original story looped in with all the characters in it and thrown into open world Gotham. And they make lots of references to the movie. So it's not playing out in the movies. It's something completely different. It's wonderful. One of the best Lego games ever played. All the Lego games are great, but this is like top tier, probably puts all the rest to shame, in my opinion. So, and that's not awesome. Just me being a Batman fan. That's me being a Lego fan. Like, it's incredible.
Sure.
So if you get a chance, check it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I haven't heard much about this outside of you talking about it. From what I've heard through you, it sounds like it's not only like one of the best Lego games, it sounds like it might be one of the best Batman games ever made. And like, again, I haven't played it, but it just sounds like almost like Lego understood the assignment. And then they also like ascended past the assignment. They're just like, no, we're not going to just make a good game. We're going to put everything in the kitchen sink in it, and we're going to make it amazing as possible. And they didn't necessarily have to do that. But I always love when it's like, you wouldn't expect Lego to make such an amazing game, but they're just going to show up and they're going to do an awesome job because why not, you know? So that's awesome to hear.
I always expect Lego to make an amazing game, by the way.
So, be fair, though, I'm trying to say it in the context of you talking about like how all encompassing of a Batman game it is, and how like it works in the plots of like all the Batman movies, and how like in depth they're going with the lore and stuff like that. And like, yes, Lego makes great games, but it's just like, of course they're going to make a good game. You just didn't know it was going to be like this amazing, is kind of what I was trying to convey there. Oh, so.
Gotcha. I understand what you're trying to say. Okay. But yeah, other than that, I watched The Mandalorian and Grogu. So, hey man, let's talk about that because that's the big, ticket movie that hit. I haven't really seen negatives for the most part. I've seen a couple, not the best reviews, but one of the things I said going into this weekend of seeing this movie was that Star Wars needs to earn the trust back of its audience. And, I wasn't necessarily looking for that. My expectations was I'm going to see a Star Wars movie. I expect a Star Wars movie. And overall, I feel I got that. So that being said, I can get into some more nitty gritty stuff. But what did you think of the movie?
Yeah. I thought it was really awesome. I like the movie. You go and you sit down, and it starts off like right in the midst of action. Like, it starts with a big bombastic action scene, which I loved. I thought it was awesome. You're kind of picking up like Din Djarin is kind of going on these missions, like taking out like various like First Order, like, you know, officers and like important people within that within that organization, if you will. And you just kind of like, it takes you on the adventure right away. You really get that feeling of, you know, Mandalorian, the show, they were always going for a kind of like a more of a Western feel, but just in an you know, a Western feel in outer space in a sci-fi setting. And I feel like this movie, like, right away, you get that feel as well. The movie, obviously, and like, we can go in more and more specifics. I'm kind of giving my general thoughts, but the movie obviously focuses a lot on like some of my favorite parts of Star Wars, which is the crazy creatures and monsters and aliens. Like, this movie has that in spades, which is pretty badass. But also, like, one of the other things that I really, really took away from this movie is I thought the music was actually really awesome. And to be honest, like, the Mandalorian TV series, the score has always been kind of hit or miss for me. Like, some parts I love, and then there's other parts where I'm like, this scene would just hit so much harder if they just used like one of the recognizable Star Wars themes, you know, like if they used like one of the songs from the original trilogy. Like, I always felt like certain scenes would hit harder when you're watching The Mandalorian, but I thought the music was actually really impressive. Like, it was very immersive and just kind of like, not like battling for your attention, but just like perfectly accentuating the scenes. I really liked when they get to the planet Shikari, where the music kind of takes this sort of like electronic style to it. That was really badass. And I really liked a lot of those electronic moments. Oddly enough, I felt like the score when he first gets to Shikari, and it's very like electronic based music. You know what song that reminded me of when it first started playing?
What?
I was waiting to hear your guys. It reminded me of our podcast theme song, actually. Like, the music started playing, and I'm like, this kind of reminds me of the Top 5 report. I wonder what Ryan would think of this part of the score of this movie. But
is they ripped us off. Interesting, which means they do listen. We don't really have cease and desist orders we send out, so I'm not going to like sue Lucasfilm, but hey, guys. Yeah.
They definitely have been listening, and yeah, they ripped us off. That's hilarious. But I thought it was really fun. There's really only one part of the movie that I wasn't the biggest fan of, and we could probably get into that a little bit. But no, overall, I really liked it. And like you said, Drew, I haven't seen a lot of like negative criticism. The negative aspects of what I've been seeing is actually more so low box office numbers, which we actually talked about that a bit. But I haven't seen a lot of people like calling this movie out, like saying like negative things about it, like they missed the mark here and there. It's more just like not enough people are seeing it, I think, which is kind of a sad state that we're in. But what were your Yeah, go ahead.
So to address the point of not enough people are seeing it, that's what I'm talking about in the realm of like Star Wars needs to earn back the trust of its audience. It had enough missteps and enough divisiveness over the past handful of years that, you know, paints a rough picture for fans sometimes. You know what I mean? So I think the average, the super fans went. Okay, the Star Wars super fans, the ones who apologize for it, the ones who defend it, the ones who truly love it, they all went. It's the average moviegoer and the younger audiences that Lucasfilm, I feel personally, is they're losing the younger audiences. But that's just my opinion, you know?
Absolutely.
But this movie, okay. So this movie, to me, it was a Star Wars movie in the sense that it was Star Wars. It's a side movie, so it's not going to get a crawl like one of the saga films, which is fine, but it had the camera wipes, it had the dissolves, it had the literally those little camera techniques that George would use. It had proper Star Wars pacing for the most part. There's one part that I didn't like kind of right in the middle of the movie, and I think it's probably the same part that you didn't like when you said that.
I'm waiting to hear it, but keep going.
And it's not going. And it's not that I... All right, I'm going to get to that in a moment, but
yeah,
overall, it was a Star Wars movie, right? The one thing... I have two negatives on this movie. One, there were sequences with CGI where there were parts where there was so much on screen that felt like a departure from the Star Wars we know. And I know sometimes people, and there's got to be someone listening that's going to go, yeah, but the prequels. And I'm like, but if you look at what the prequels were, there was way more practical in the prequels than what you think. And you should look into that, because episode one had more practical effects than all of the original trilogy did. But it was all disguised and no one ever noticed until the end when you started breaking down how they did it. There's way more practical in episode one than you realize. So when you look at that and then you break down, like, there were sequences where I'm like, this is nothing but CGI. I'm not even sure if Mando is a practical effect on this screen. So that was a negative I had, because I felt like it was a departure. But sometimes when you're dealing with the creature aspect, you can't do much with the fact that these creatures don't exist in real life. The other negative I had was there's a spot right in the middle where Mandalorian gets poisoned.
Yeah.
And Grogu's taking care of him. Now,
yeah.
I didn't
exact same spot that drove me crazy, but
the only reason I think it drove me crazy is it felt a little too lengthy and it threw off the pacing of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it all took place on an enemy planet. Those are my 3 points. Like, if that happened on a planet where there wasn't enemies trying to hunt them down, I probably wouldn't have had a problem with it. But it felt out of place for the speed at which that story was being told. That's really the only reason I had a problem with it. Cause I'm like, it just didn't fit because of pacing. And it was in a weird physical location where I'm like, no, man, there's people trying to kill you on this planet and that's not going to work. Right. That's the only reason that part bothered.
So. That's a good point. Like, you know, nobody found them, you know, nobody found Grogu's little hut that he built, like, within that time frame. The part that annoyed me about it, because at first I was like, oh, cool, like, you know, Grogu's kind of playing rescue and he's gonna, like, nurse Din Djarin back to health and stuff like that. But what drove me nuts is you're watching the movie and, you know, like, at least I'm watching it, and in the back of my head, I have no doubt that Din Djarin is going to be revived. He's going to wake up. He's going to be fine. He's going to save the day at the end of the movie. And so then you have to watch it for like 20 minutes as, like, Grogu tinkers about and steals food, like all these little bits. And I'm just like, can we get to the point where they take out some huts or something? Can we get back to the action, you know? And not that the movie has to only be action, but that was the one spot where I was ahead of the story, where I'm like, I already know it's going to happen, and now I have to sit and wait for it to happen. And again, it's just that pacing thing. Like, maybe that part could have been edited down like a little bit or something, but otherwise I still loved the movie. It was just that little section. So that's pretty funny that you had the same complaint there, Drew.
Yeah, that's my only thing. So I appreciate you saying that. And I agree with literally everything you just said. The opening sequence with the walkers, that was amazing.
Yes, that was awesome.
But that was the entire advertisement for the movie leading up to the movie. Like, that was everything with those walkers, that was the trailers. Multiple trailers, that's what they showed. Aside from a little bit with the fighting pits, which I'll get to in a second, but that was like, in the realm of trailers spoiling everything, I felt like they kept showing that because it's the opening of the movie and they're not spoiling anything, right? They're not spoiling any story stuff because it's the opening scene.
Oh, so you're saying that's like a good thing about the trailers, is it was all from the beginning, right?
It was a good thing for the trailer because it was all from the beginning, because ultimately you're not spoiling story. But I'm also going, I've seen this 6 times. You know what I mean? Like, because it's the only thing you wanted to show me was the walkers. And I'm thinking it's this bigger sequence at like the middle of the movie or something, you know?
So that's interesting, because I mean, I watched a number of the trailers and stuff for this film. And the parts that always stuck out to me was Rada the Hutt, the dragon snake. There's one part that was taken from the chase scene on Shikari when there's kind of when it's kind of Din Djarin and Grogu chasing down Rata when he's getting away after they escape the sort of like underground wrestling ring, however you want to describe it. Like it's those shots that really stuck in my mind. So I guess you're right. Like a lot of those shots from that first sequence were in the trailer. I just didn't really think about it while watching the movie. But again, like with Star Wars, like the space monsters, the aliens, the weird creatures, that's like my favorite part. So maybe it makes sense that like, you know, the Rat of the Hutt stuff stuck in my mind from watching the trailers and stuff like that. But I didn't mean to disrail you at all. You can keep going. I just wanted to throw in my two cents there. So
I'm with you. That's just not that I'm like disappointed in that. It's more of like the trailer showed that Walker sequence and I'm like, come on, man. Like, you know, I just felt like I've already seen this.
Yeah.
It was actually interesting because my kid had not watched any of the trailers or anything. So he knew nothing going on. And there was a really good shot of the floor of the fighting pit. Oh, let me jump back real quick. The Walker sequence was amazing. Yes. Hands down. Fantastic. One of the best Walker sequences there. I'm just saying that I'd seen it enough times. And then on Disney Plus, if you watched Disney Plus and Hulu released a Mandalorian and Grogu special look clip, and it was like a 6-minute clip, and I thought it was going to be like a sizzle reel. Nope, it was that whole opening sequence. So there's that.
It's pretty cool. I got to show that to my kid, though. I bet he's going to be stoked when he finds out he can watch that opening sequence over and over.
Yeah, it's just that clip. When you get to the fighting pits, which was awesome, I kind of leaned over to my kid. I was like, dude, look at the floor. And he goes, what? And I go, next time you get a good glimpse of it, look at the floor. Yeah. And he didn't notice right away, but the floor of the fighting pit was a Djarik board. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was great when he's like, are you watching, is this a Djarik match? When they put that into context. So basically the chess table and the Millennium Falcon is the video game version of the actual fighting arena event, right? With all those creatures, which was great to see. It just brings the table a little more to life, right? And you as a fan can just like, oh, that's where all that comes from. You know what I mean? It was really sweet. I spend a lot of time complaining that the Disney Star Wars didn't have enough aliens. Whether it be from Andor to it didn't matter what it was, to even the sequel trilogy. I'm like, you don't have enough aliens. There's no Greedos in the background. What is going on? Right.
Yeah.
And this movie was like almost all aliens and it was crazy. Aliens and creatures. And I'm like, geez, there's just tons of it, which is not a negative, but it made me miss seeing a Star Destroyer on screen. With him hunting down the Imperials, I thought maybe we'd see a TIE fighter in the air, or we'd see maybe a Star Destroyer hovering over the mountain or something. You know what I mean? Just something. But the Walker is as cool as it was. I was like, man, what happened to the days of the Empire? Right. I want to talk about the voice actors a little bit. Martin Scorsese, I knew he was in the movie and I knew the character he played. So knowing that he was the food vendor, I knew that was coming. I didn't know it was going to be as lengthy of a character as it was. I thought it would be like just a cameo things, but that was a lot of fun. And if you didn't tell me it was Martin Scorsese, I might have been like, man, he sounds a lot like Martin Scorsese. but because I think he's got like a really unique voice, but you know, hey. My one complaint, though, is Jeremy Allen White as Rod of the Hutt. I don't have a problem with the voice. I don't have a problem with the actor they chose for the voice. I just have a problem with the fact that they made a massive deal out of it, and then they kind of digitized his voice. So if you didn't tell me that was Jeremy Allen White, or I didn't notice in the credits, it really wouldn't have mattered to me. Because his voice, I feel like, was altered enough to where it didn't really matter that it was Jeremy Allen White. It could have been anybody. And I just think that was interesting in the realm of like, I always feel like they're trying to get all these giant names into, and this is a knock on all voice acting stuff, is they're always trying to get these massive names to do these characters, and you have insanely talented voice actors out there that could do 20 voices for you, and they're not getting the work because you want to give it to like a bigger name to draw in dollars.
Yeah.
You know, so that I find that kind of obnoxious, but I mean, Jeremy Allen White was fine. It's just if I didn't know that, it really wouldn't have mattered. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think this is an issue. We've talked about this on the show once or twice, and I feel like this is a constant thing that's brought up kind of like in our space, like the comic booky pop culture nerd world, whatever. Like, we all love these animated series that have these amazing voice actors, you know? And then when it comes to big Hollywood productions, they always go for like more so the household names, like the big named actors. You know, we're going to have Jack Black, you know, play, and I'm not a big Borderlands fan, but he's going to play the robot. And is it Claptrap in Borderlands? Like, we're going to have Jack Black do this character, and we're going to have, you know, Chris Rock play this character over here. And it's always these big name actors, but we're like, dude, there's like 100 amazing like voice actors who aren't household names, but they probably could do maybe even a better job than these big name actors you're hiring. But I think when it comes down to it, I think the unfortunate part is I think those big names sell tickets. Like, as sad as it is, like, I think that people do get excited about like, oh, Eddie Murphy is, you know, voicing this character in this upcoming movie. I think that does sell tickets to the sort of normie audience, if that makes sense. So it's kind of I'm on your side with the argument, but it is like kind of just the state of the way things are, you know?
Yeah. Now, that being said, I thought Rod of the Hutt was awesome, where I remember a day when Clone Wars came out and we were all like, what? Jabba's got a kid? What is this? You know, absolutely crazy. And I remember Clone Wars were like, we got to talk about the purple elephant in the room. And we were referring to Zero the Hutt. And now Zero the Hutt's awesome. And because when we first were introduced here and we're like, what the hell is this? Zero the Hutt, this is ridiculous. Rod of the Hutt, what is this? Like, it felt dumb and cheesy. And I felt it kind of degraded Jabba a little bit. But Rada was great. He was fantastic. And then not just him as the Hutts, but seeing way more of the Hutt culture on Nel Hutta, and seeing the palace and seeing them like kind of like the slug life that they actually do live. I thought that was really cool. And like that Mando's walking through the one hallway and you got the one Hutt just kind of sliding out of that one like tube hallway like thing, or that resting space. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was, I'm like, this is hilarious, but it's so Star Wars in the best way, right? So if you're gonna have a creature like that, what does that mean? You know? So
I love that the sort of slimy Hutt tunnels that were all over the place, and you know that place was filled with a lot more Hutts. Like you said, there's that one part where like it's like you look down like a side tunnel and you see like one Hutt kind of like slinking through like the tunnel, like sliding out, but there's other Hutts in the background. So it is that's the kind of stuff that's fun about Star Wars, is those little bits of like background lore that they bring in, and it just keeps your mind racing after you've seen the movie, like wondering like, yeah, I wonder what, like, if you explored that palace further, like what exactly it was like. So really good call with that.
And not only that, but I thought of you directly because I remember this was like probably like early days of the podcast. You were like, man, I wish we'd get more Hutt stuff, like learn more about them. And this movie was for you.
No, absolutely. You know, they had a lot of Hutt stuff. And like, that's one of the things I loved about the Boba Fett TV series too. The Book of Boba Fett, like they had the twins in that series, and then they sold they gave a Rancor to Boba Fett as a gift. And that was like pretty badass and stuff. And I like that they're focusing on a lot of this like Hutt, like, you know, Return of the Jedi centric stuff. Also, since you mentioned, I can't remember what it was. It was something. Sorry, I'm like losing my train of thought. Right. There's something you mentioned that was like related. Oh, no, I know what it is. The Clone Wars, like just having Rada the Hutt in there. I feel like a lot of these elements are coming out like is this like Dave Filoni is doing? Because like they had Rat of the Hutt coming back. They have Zeb in this movie. They've got a lot of like prequel or prequel adjacent sort of stuff going on. And I remember there was a time like when Force Awakens came out, like Disney was just like, I don't know if they came out and said it, but they were like very viscerally like shunning the prequels and all that lore. And it's kind of funny because I feel like we've came full circle where we're getting like elements from not just the prequels, but also like, you know, the animated series and stuff like that. Do you think it's Dave Filoni that's bringing this in? Or do you think it's Disney like kind of recognizing like people actually like some of these elements that we didn't think they would before? Or like what exactly is going on there?
I think it's Dave Filoni studying at the feet of George Lucas and Disney getting Kathleen Kennedy away from the helm and letting Dave cook. And Dave's like, no, this is what you guys need to be doing. And Disney's listening.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's we've recognized that the brand needs to be fixed and we're going to give it to a guy who understands it better than anybody because we can't talk to the creator himself. Right. Yeah. That's what I think is going on. Just my thought, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just didn't know if you had like any more specific insight, but again, I'm loving it. Like I'm loving seeing these characters, seeing Rata come back, see more Hutt stuff. I am a little bit like, I know Zero the Hutt in the Clone Wars movie and TV series, like I know he was speaking in English, and I think that's a choice that was kind of made because it was like focused more towards kids. In live action, it's still a little jarring for me to see Hutt speaking in like common tongue, you know, like seeing them not speak in Huttese, like seeing them speak English. It is a little jarring for me because I do like when I see them speaking their own language, and it just feels a little bit more alien, a little bit more otherworldly. But that's a small complaint. Like I still did love all the Hutt stuff and, you know, seeing Rata be a badass. Well,
when you look at Star Wars as a whole, having the Hutt speak in Huttese is cool. Don't get me wrong, I'm all for it. However, at the same time, I'm also all for the fact that if you pay attention, other aliens speak English. So when you think about a world where multiple language dialects exists, there's going to be a point where like one, maybe more are going to be able to do that just because of common dialect sort of thing. And it's no different than anyone else being bilingual. And that's the only reason that's how I got over it with Zero. But Zero is also on a show that was kind of designed for all ages, and it was designed to get kid attention, right? So you need the Hutts. You can't have kids aren't going to sit and read subtitles. They're not going to sit for that. So you make the Zero the Hutt, you know, speak English, fine, no big deal. And then when you get to something like this, there's nothing wrong with caring for it because you set the stage for it.
And right? I do think that with Rata, it makes a lot of sense that he was kind of trying to leave his family and like his, you know, reign like behind. He's trying to just like go his own way, so it makes sense that he might, you know, choose to speak more in a different language than what he was raised with. But just like seeing like the twins, like they had a couple lines in English and stuff, and that was just, it was just a little jarring. But I do understand why they did it, and overall I still liked all those elements, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. That's really kind of all I got. I really enjoyed. That's the other thing. One more thing. Now this is a side movie. This isn't a saga film. So it doesn't get a crawl, but it's got some kind of a word bubble blurb kind of a thing at the beginning. No different than like Rogue One and Solo and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Right. All right. What this does has, this is the very first movie, Star Wars movie, to get opening credits. How did you feel about the opening credits?
Well, I kind of was prepared because we discussed it on the show. I think if I didn't know that those were going to be there, it might have been a little bit more jarring for me. So I thought they were noticeable, but I didn't think it was like that distracting. Like it didn't bother me that much necessarily. How about you?
I found them to be very reminiscent of another film that I thought was very interesting for the opening of this movie. They looked exactly like Top Gun credits.
Yes, okay. I didn't know you were going to say that, but when you said it, like the only film that was coming to mind for me was Top Gun. So
yeah, like that, like literally you got the X-Wings and sunset and it says Pedro Pascal. And then, you know, like as they're coming in for a landing at the base and you got a up close shot of R2 kind of working his way towards an X-Wing as it's getting ready to take off. Like those were Top Gun credits. Right. And I thought that was very interesting. And Star Wars is always, a lot of times Star Wars will pay homage to other films. And yes. Dave Filoni has done it several times in the confines of, like the Clone Wars, because they have a couple episodes that are very reminiscent of a Godzilla movie. And they have episodes that are very reminiscent of a James Bond film. And they have reminiscent of, they have different, like they're paying homages to certain different things. The Kurosawa films for sure, because it's Star Wars and that draws inspiration anyway. But Dave Filoni very specifically has done that with his other projects. So to see it like this, I'm not shocked at all. I just thought it was, I'm like, this looks like Top Gun in space. And then it made me go, as always, where is my Rogue Squadron? Anyway.
Sure thing. And then you also talking about, you're also reminding me of Rogue One had like some visual cues that were very reminiscent of Apocalypse Now and stuff like that. So Star Wars has always done that. It is a little bit weird to see it, you know, like Top Gun came out like almost 10 years after the original movie. So I think that is a little bit weird when you think about it, but still really cool. I didn't think it was too distracting, I guess. So I didn't think it was too distracting.
I didn't think it was distracting. I just thought it was like, oh, this looks like Top Gun.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
All right, man. That's it for my review. I don't know if you have anything else to add to it, but I really enjoyed it and I look forward to seeing it again. I really do want to watch it again. But I just had that one spot in the middle, and that one spot in the middle might sit differently when I watch it again. You know,
I think it's going to be more boring the second time, but I love the movie otherwise. So I'm not trying to complain too much. So
sure. Well, how about this?
But no, I did love the movie overall. It was really fun. So hoping cool. to see more. So
yeah, right. Well, hey, let's jump over to news, which is very light this. So let's talk about this. So first off, we have a live action Gundam film coming, right?
Yeah, Sydney Sweeney.
I know. Now we also have a live action Robotech movie in the works.
I think I caught wind of this. This is pretty cool.
I mean, it is cool, but I'm just worried that they're going to drop them at the same time, and it's going to be like Dante's Peak and Volcano and Armageddon and Deep Impact, and people are going to go, which one with the giant robots again? Is that Transformers? You know? So,
yeah.
My butt's in a seat for all of it. I just want to, like, I just point that out going, the timing could be really goofy, because I feel like they just announced that, and then they're like, hey, by the way... all right.
I'm interested in who they cast. Like, if Sydney Sweeney's the big draw for Gundam, who are they gonna have in Robotech? But either way, yeah. Cool stuff.
Yeah. So here we go. So we have the live action One Piece television series. We have the original anime manga story, right? That the live action is adapting, but we are having this One Piece remake show coming, right? I'm bringing this up because they have episode count rumored, right? It's a rumored episode count because they're cutting out with the remake of the animation. They're updating the animation to modern day animation, and they're cutting out a lot of filler so they can edit it down and tell a more concise story. So to give you perspective, they have a rumored count, which if they were to do the entirety of the show, it's going to take it from 1,068 episodes and cut it down to 266 total episodes.
I like it.
That makes you really question how much filler is there, right? Or what are they jumping over? So for example, the reason I bring this up is because the very first story arc is called the East Blue story arc. That is everything, because the show starts in the East Blue, and the whole point is they got to go to the Grand Line to find the One Piece. So it's like get to the Grand Line, right? So the East Blue up to them entering the Grand Line. The original animation is 61 episodes to get to the Grand Line. In the remake, it's going to be 25. Which is nice. Interesting, right? And then the next arc, which is the Alabasta story arc, is 68 episodes original. The remake is going to be 30. So these are rumored, but it's kind of staggering just to kind of go, oh, that's interesting how they're going to like cut that down. And we're going to see more when we get to it in the realm. But I thought the episode count was kind of interesting. The one that kind of blew my mind a little bit is we have Ford, which is one of the largest, is 112 episodes original, and they're cutting it down to 28. So okay. So it's like it's the cut down, and it's like I said, this is rumor. It's not 100%. This could be false in terms of the episode counts, but it was worth mentioning. Going, yeah, they're going to be removing a ton of filler, but that's the. And you talked to me a little bit about how like some of those original manga artists and comic creators had to deal with like how filler was created because they had to wait on issues.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, pretty much like if you watch like Dragon Ball Z is like the perfect example because it's so notorious for like having a full episode where it's like, you know, like two characters just like floating in the sky yelling at each other, like just screaming and building up their power levels, and it takes so long for them to fight. And like I love Dragon Ball Z, so I'm not trying to talk like crap about it, but that's just what it's known for. Like they have that filler, and kind of like delving more into like learning about like the anime and manga industries, you learn stuff that like, you know, Dragon Ball, they added filler to the anime so that the anime wouldn't pass up where the manga was. So like they need to make sure they're pacing slow enough that they can keep up with the manga chapters, like that they don't get ahead of where the manga is in the storyline. And I think that stuff's really funny. So like the original cut of Dragon Ball Z, for example, there's a ton of filler, but then they eventually re-released there's Dragon Ball Z Kai, which is like more of a trimmed down, like closer to the manga pacing, cut out a lot of the random filler. And it almost seems like this new One Piece series might be a similar thing where they cut out all, you know, trim the fat, take out a lot of filler, give you the same story, but just a lot faster paced. My only concern, and I haven't really delved into One Piece at all yet, but my only concern would be that, you do worry a bit about like them pacing things a little too fast, you know, like I've seen things like that. Like, if you've ever watched the anime Hellsing, which is an awesome anime, like I really love it, but, they redid that anime and it was Hellsing Ultimate, I think it was called. And I remember couldn't. Despite like the reboot of it, despite Hellsing Ultimate being like much better animation, I struggled getting into it because the pacing was like too fast. Like I remember watching it and like there's moments in the first episode that were like longer moments, and this like redone version just what like jolted through it so fast, and I'm like, no, the pacing's off. I just can't do it. Like, they're not giving the proper emotional weight to things. And that's what I would be worried about with this new One Piece reboot. But sure. As somebody who's a One Piece noob, it does sound cool because I'm like, oh, you know, I'll watch 200 episodes as opposed to 1,000, you know? I don't mind getting the full story within like a shorter time span, you know? So
sure.
There's a give and take with, you know, the goods and bads of it. So.
Yeah, we'll see later when that comes out, but yeah, just thought the episode count was interesting. All right, and then the last one is this one. This one kind of struck. This one was just kind of cool. This is the realm of AI, but I want you to think about this on a vocal level, kind of in the a la James Earl Jones's voice rights have been purchased by Disney, so Disney owns them. So when they have to do Darth Vader, it's always going to be James Earl Jones, right? And you're just like, yes, that makes sense. 11 Labs has struck an expansive deal with Stan Lee's universe and the late Marvel comic writer's voice and likeness for its iconic marketplace. the collection of celebrity personality voices and likenesses that companies can license. So ultimately what happens is this company has acquired the likeness rights to Stan Lee's voice. The reason I think this is cool is because Stan Lee could technically do cameos in Marvel films again. And I think it'd be kind of cool. Like you could literally have a Marvel movie start now. Welcome True Believers. You could hear him saying that and then going into it. Right. Something, you know, that could be really interesting. Like we don't need a CG Stan on screen, but the fact that we could have his voice somewhere is really kind of cool. So, and I only say that just because of the James Earl Jones thing, but I'm curious about your thoughts on this.
Yeah, this is another story that I've been seeing this shared around, and it's one of those things where it's like, it's been a busy week, and I every time I see it, I'm like, man, I don't even know. Like, I don't even have the time to begin to think about this or researching it. I don't really know how I feel about it, though, because like, I do understand, like, it is cool to see like Stan Lee's actual likeness continue to be carried on. And I'm hoping that like his family got like a big chunk of change for, you know, from this deal and stuff like that. But then part of me is just like, I don't know if I'm even like fully on board with the James Earl Jones thing, to be honest. Like, no. Part of me is like, you could, like, I get it, but like, you could still, like, maybe there's somebody who's a James Earl Jones impersonator who could be like, that's a job that somebody could have that you're not giving to them, you know? So like, I think this is a really deep and tough issue. And I kind of feel bad because I haven't like put a lot of thought to it before jumping on the show tonight, you know?
Well, think about it. We can always revisit, and I have a feeling in the crazy world of AI, we're going to topic. So
I'm also pretty biased though too, because my knee jerk reaction is to be against like anything AI related, but I think that's like the fine line is like, if they're doing it in a way to honor Stan's legacy, that's cool. If they did it in a way to support his family, like if his family got like a big chunk of change from this, like that's a really cool thing. But I think there's a lot of just esoteric, like, you know, implications when you actually go into the weeds of, you know, all the ethics of, you know, the use of AI where it gets really hairy. And that's the parts that I haven't really thought through yet. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, no, I hear you. And that's cool. I wasn't sure what I was expecting you to have in terms of thoughts. So don't take that in any offense whatsoever. I just think it's cool because of the James Earl Jones being able to be Darth Vader forever if we want him to be. And I guess Mufasa too, if we have to dig back into the Lion King, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, man, that's all I got for our news and watching and reading. Unless you have anything to add, we can jump over to tonight's list.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Cool. All right. Everybody, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
And now for the top five.
All right, Peter, this week was my pick. Yep, I almost said your pick. My pick. This is one of those top five lists that's a little off the beaten path for us, I believe, in the realm of like kind of strange. I was thinking because of the Batman Deadpool crossover comic that they did and the Superman Spider-Man crossover, I thought it'd be kind of funny to do a crossover kind of episode where, and I don't know how long this list is going to take. This might be very fast conversation because we're just kind of going, hey, wouldn't it be cool if, the idea is taking a comic book character. Superheroes are the best example, but a more realistic comic book character and mashing it up with a toon character. You used last week as a really good example. The easy one would be Superman and Bugs Bunny team up and go on an adventure.
Yes.
I could not figure for the life of me the coyote teaming up with who. I was like, who would the coyote team up with? Couldn't figure it out. In my mind for no reason. I'm just like, this is ridiculous. But so I don't have a coyote one for you, but I just thought this would be kind of cool. Like, who would I team up if I wanted to do some crazy cartoon to comic book crossover kind of a thing. It's a goofy list because sometimes we got to do those, especially when you're like, man, what haven't we done yet? You know? So I found this list to be difficult in the sense that what haven't we seen before? That's where I found it difficult.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, it was more like, man, how do I pull out like something like super clever that no one's seen before? And then I started kind of focusing more on the adventure side. And not that I've written adventures or not that I'm like, oh, hey, wouldn't it be kind of funny if this was more of a, how would this play out? How would this, wouldn't it be kind of funny to see these two characters have to go at it? And whether it be against each other or on some kind of crazy, like just team up adventure. So how did you fare putting this list together?
Yeah, I think it's a really fun off the wall topic. I like that you brought up like kind of just DC characters in general, because I feel like DC and you know, DC and Looney Tunes, like both owned by Warner Brothers, and they actually have a long history of crossing over. You know, like I remember as a kid, they used to have like, you know, Looney Tunes Happy Meals at McDonald's where it'd be like, you know, it'd be like Bugs Bunny and he would have like a little removable like Superman costume he could wear. And then you'd have like, I think there was like a Tasmanian Devil as the Flash and like, you know, Daffy Duck as Batman and stuff. And my whole life, there's been like a long history. You know, you think about if you go to Six Flags theme parks and it's just like, you know, Looney Tunes and DC superheroes all over the place. And because of that, like you said, like, what haven't we seen before? There's recent like comic book crossovers between the DC characters and the Looney Tunes. Last week I mentioned there's also a recent crossover between Sonic the Hedgehog and some of the DC characters. So I don't know if it's because of like those examples. I was drawing a lot of blanks when I was trying to put my list together. I was like, man, who should I pick? And it actually wasn't until like this afternoon that I finalized my list. And it's kind of funny because once I started,
and you only like, did that, and you only did that because you're like, crap, I got to get this done.
a little bit. But then once I like finalized it, then like, all of a sudden, that's when stuff starts popping in my head. I'm like, oh no, I got to do a crossover with these characters and stuff like that. But it's a really fun list. It's very, it's one of those lists that's very hard to, what do I want to say? It was very hard to put together because of how the wide variety of things you could pull from, right? There's just so many superheroes and so many cartoon characters. So it was really hard to put it together. But I think regardless, like even if I could have thought about this like for a couple more weeks and maybe adjusted my list, I think either way, it's going to be a fun conversation and we're going to talk about some weird stuff. And that's really what I'm here for. You know what I mean? So
sure.
With well, all that being said, keep going.
I was just gonna say I have one honorable mention. I almost had, but what's your deal?
I have two honorable mentions actually. So
interesting. Interesting. Giving me a huge speech about how you had it so hard and you were actually able to have two.
Well, that's what it was. It was hard until the last minute, and then all of a sudden, I don't know if the pressure got to me, and I started thinking of some good ideas, but yeah, that's how it worked out. So I guess I might have to do two in a row. I don't know how that shakes out, but I'll have to do the first one at least.
yeah, you got to do the first one, and technically you got to do two in a row. That's how the
Okay, fair enough, fair
otherwise,
enough.
Otherwise, I don't end up being the last, because this was my pick, so.
Yeah, so my honorable mentions, one of the parts that makes them honorable mentions is they're kind of more like team crossovers as opposed to like single characters. But the first one I went with is I thought it'd be really fun to have the Planet Express crew from Futurama going to Eternia and crossing over with He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. And this isn't necessarily a very thought out thing. It's just one of those things that popped in my head. Like, I love Futurama, and I'm like, who would they cross over with? And I'm like, oh no, He-Man. Like, they totally would go to Eternia and cross over with the He-Man characters, and it would be hilarious. And you know that, like, Dr. Zoidberg would get some crazy, like, barbarian getup or some crazy sci-fi getup while they're over there and stuff. But I just think it'd be funny just seeing that mesh, you know, because He-Man is it's a series that's extremely, like, it's very goofy when you look at it on paper, but the characters treat everything very seriously. And Futurama is very much the opposite of that. And I think it'd be a very funny clash in that way. So that's the first one that I went with.
See, I thought you were going to say the Planet Express and Guardians of the Galaxy, but, and that would be like almost the same show.
Yeah, that's like, true.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, of course Star-Lord would be like, hey, we got to go deliver a pizza. Like,
and I didn't even think of that one, which is really weird because that should have been the most obvious one. But yeah, for some reason, well, I think I was
here for to give you the obvious.
Well, I think on Futurama, they have so many episodes that are just weird, like weird adventures on just weird planets. So I think I wanted a little bit of that, like a little bit more of the culture shock. So, sure. But yeah, that's my first one. Should I do my next honorable mention or
you should only, cause I only have one. That's just how the honorable, that's how the game works. So you got to go twice.
Okay. So my next honorable mention is one that might be the pick I would most want to see, but it would never happen. And that's because,
well, how did the pick you most want to see end up as an honorable mention? Because, your actual list?
Because it has the least likelihood of happening. That's why.
All right. Sure.
Because this one seems like too much of a shot in the dark, because the one I picked with is two franchises that I've talked ad nauseum on the podcast before. But I went with, I think it'd be cool to be a Scooby-Doo crossover with Blunt Man and Chronic. And the reason that will never happen is because Scooby-Doo is a kids franchise. And even if they tried to, you know, edit it down, take out all the naughty bits, the characters' names are Blunt Man and Chronic. It could never happen. And that's the superhero alter egos of Jay and Silent Bob from the Kevin Smith movies. Now, they could do a Scooby-Doo and Jay and Silent Bob crossover. They could do that. And they could present Jay and Silent Bob in a way that they don't really reveal that they're drug dealers and potheads. And they could do a cleaned up version of Jay and Silent Bob. But calling them Blunt Man and Chronic just wouldn't work. I know this is a crossover that we saw a glimpse of in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, but that was really only for like 2 minutes of screen time or something like that. I think it'd be fun to see like an animated special, like a Scooby-Doo special. You know, Scooby-Doo's crossed over with WWE. They've met Kiss. They've crossed over with Batman. Give us the Jay and Silent Bob crossover with Scooby-Doo. It's what everybody wants. Like, just do it. Stop making us wait.
Yeah.
So that's my next one.
Yeah, I was going to say the... I was going to remind you of the one, the scene in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. But yeah, that was almost more of like a... It wasn't a dream sequence, but it was enough to go, did that even happen? You know what I mean? Like... In the realm of light.
I mean, was it a dream sequence? I don't even know if we know, but it was a really funny gag. But I just think it'd be funny to see, you know, Jay and Silent Bob solving a mystery with the Mystery Machine gang or something like that. So
sure. All right. So this one, this is an honorable mention because in a weird way, we sort of saw it, but not really. So the idea is Daffy Duck as Duck Dodgers. Teaming up with the Green Lantern.
Ooh, cool.
Right? It sounds like it's like they're space police and they're going to go on a buddy cop adventure, right? The reason I say we sort of saw this was in Lego Batman 3, the video game, you go to the Green Lantern planets and Daffy Duck as Duck Dodgers is kind of like a guide on all the planets.
Yeah,
he's not a team up. He's not a part of a level. He's not a part of a story. But when you're doing the free roam part, he's like a guide when you're on the planets. Be like, hey, guys, we need to go over here. You know what I mean? Which was kind of a fun little nugget, but I would, you know, because I was like, Duck Dodgers and Green Lantern. I'm like, wait, we saw that. Wait, we never actually really saw that. But
yeah,
because of the video game, that's why it's an honorable mention. But the team up idea, it's kind of cool. So
no, I love it. I think Green Lantern, obviously, like, there's Green Lanterns of like all sorts of weird alien races. So if you know, if one of the Earth Green Lanterns encountered Duck Dodgers, they wouldn't even skip a beat. They wouldn't even blink. They'd just be like, oh, okay, this is a weird, like, you know, duck alien creature or whatever they thought it was. But no, this one's super fun. It's a really fun one when it comes to like cool cosmic storylines. And this one, I mean, this has potential of actually happening, like I said, with the DC Looney Tunes stuff. So good stuff.
Yeah. All right, man. What's your first actual pick of the night?
Yeah. So you're going to change my order a little bit, because I actually did have a Daffy Duck crossover on my list.
Well, you can knock it up and get it out of the way now. What?
But yeah, like this one isn't necessarily as well thought out as the one that you said, but I just thought a Deadpool Daffy Duck crossover would be so hilarious, because I think a lot of these like toon meets superhero sort of crossovers, a lot of times there's the potential for like you have the cartoon character who's acting really goofy and really annoying, and the superhero who's kind of more serious and getting annoyed by the cartoon character. And I think this one would be the exact opposite. I think this would be Daffy Duck, like whatever adventure Deadpool and Daffy Duck are forced to go on together. Daffy Duck cannot stand Deadpool. He hates his sense of humor. He's just driving him nuts. And I just think it would be hilarious. It's like almost to the level of like any of the Looney Tunes shorts where it's just Bugs Bunny driving Daffy Duck crazy. I imagine the same scenario, just Deadpool in place of Bugs Bunny. So that was my next pick. I just thought this one would be a hilarious personality clash. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. That is. And that's not one that I thought about. I was thinking how Deadpool would go with, but I was like, and I always was one of the shortlist ideas was Deadpool with Jerry the Mouse.
Oh yeah, that'd be cool.
but that was a shortlist idea, and then I was like, how would that even work? But yeah, so
I do like Deadpool crossing over with cartoon characters though, because you know, if you think of like the classic like Looney Tunes rules, like these are characters who never die. Like they have pianos dropped on them and they're blown up, but they always survive. And Deadpool has the healing factor, so he could survive a lot of that same stuff. So that's another fun aspect of it. But that's probably all I have to say on that one. Sure. What do you got for us next?
All right. So this first one I got for you, this was literally just the hilarity that would ensue with this. And I almost feel like, and you got to understand, this is more two characters going on a shopping spree kind of a situation. But we got Harley Quinn and Dot Warner. and just let them go on a girl's day shopping trip and just let things happen. And I don't know if I like the script sort of writes itself in a sense. But yeah, that's that combination right there.
Yeah, that's pretty fun. I'm trying to think if there's like any good like any like good Animaniacs villains they could go up against, or like, yeah, I don't know if it's like,
well, the Joker Animaniacs teams villains, up or like I don't even think you need a villain. I think it just needs to be like the villain is got to be like, it's got to, you got to take the like the store clerk or the guy who works at a department store that they're shopping at has to be played by the psychiatrist, and let it be, you know what I mean? And it just goes from like the psychiatrist guy from Animaniacs, like he's playing the store clerk in this little episode, or he is the, or they're going on a shopping trip and him as the medical doctor who's in charge of both of them has to tag along to make sure that they are behaving.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's a great like classic like comedy scenario. And that's a psychiatrist guy, I can't remember his name, but he's definitely one of the characters I was thinking of who would be involved, but I just couldn't figure out which way. So
sure.
Yeah, good stuff though.
Yeah. All right, man. What's the next one for me?
Okay, so let's see. So my next one, I really wanted to do a pick involving Mr. Magoo. Because Mr. Magoo, I think, is a very funny character. Like, he's a classic cartoon character who's involved in a lot of really funny gags. And he's kind of a one-trick pony. Like, the whole joke is he can't see very well. So he walks around town and he walks into random places he's not supposed to go to. He like walks through construction sites. He almost dies like a million times in every episode, but he ends up, he has the luck to survive. And, you know, like, that's basically the whole shtick. Like, he can't see very well, but it's hilarious and entertaining to watch. And I was like, who should cross over with Mr. Magoo? And the first character I thought of was Superman, because I'm like, Superman, he can do anything, like super strength, super speed. Like, he's going to be able to keep Mr. Magoo safe. But then I'm like, man, that's just a little too easy when you think about it. And so the character I picked was a crossover between Mr. Magoo and Spider-Man. And the way I would see this like scenario playing out is just Mr. Magoo goes and gets like a tour of New York City, and he goes through his usual antics. Like, he almost runs into the subway, literally, or he goes into a construction site, or he's almost like falling off skyscrapers. And the whole time Spider-Man is just chasing him around the city, like web slinging, trying to keep this like almost blind guy safe. And I just think it would be hilarious. Plus, I was thinking of like Spider-Man, how he always has like the kind of like the jokey commentary on everything, and I just think it would be like a hilarious scenario. So that was my next pick, was Mr. Magoo meets Spider-Man, I guess. So there you go.
In the realm of like crossovers, like, I don't know, I didn't go too far back in terms of animation, but like Mr. Magoo, and then throw in like, I mean, looking back at like Hong Kong Phooey or like some of those cartoons, you're just like, what? But yeah, no, Mr. Magoo is a good solid one. I didn't think about him as at all, so
yeah I think this one would be funny. So but yeah, what do you got next?
All right, so my next one is, this is one where not a lot would get done, no matter what world-ending event, no matter what superhero needs this would be, this is one that probably would not get done. But, and you'll understand why when I say the names, but we're gonna go Booster Gold teaming up with Johnny Bravo. And nice. I feel like anyone who follows comics and cartoons and stuff understands what I mean by that. And yeah, nothing would get done. And they would, they'd probably end up like, man, maybe we should help out. But man, this pizza's nice. And that waitress that brought us the pizza is pretty cute. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So
I'm just imagining like Johnny Bravo just being so impressed with like all of Booster Gold's tech and just being like, oh, I got to get me one of these for myself. And like just all these like goofy lines like that. But
yeah, but there's also no, like a sense of like stress that Johnny, that Booster Gold would be in, like, dude, we got to still do the task, but like they wouldn't get anything done. Like,
absolutely. And then through some like accidental like string of events, they end up saving the day in the end. This is another one that kind of writes itself. So good call.
Again, if this is your first time listening to this, this is a very strange top five list, but yeah. All right, Peter, what do you got for us?
Yeah, so my next one, I feel like this one is kind of more of a team crossover as well, but I think it's a really funny idea. But I have this vision of what if Mr. Mixyaz Pitalik, what if him, like that character, the fifth dimensional imp from, you know, Superman and DC Comics, what if he showed up at the Park District in regular show? And he started just doing like his crazy, like fifth dimensional pranks and just making everything go haywire. And the reason I thought this was funny is, one, we've talked about this on the show. Regular Show is an awesome series because it's always like, it starts off as like this kind of mundane slacker comedy with Mordecai and Rigby. And by the end of the episode, it's always some apocalyptic event. Like, it's always like some portal to hell opens, or like, you know, some like asteroid in a crash on Earth, or we've resurrected the dinosaurs, or it's something really crazy and esoteric and really fun like that. So Mr. Mixyaz Pitalik really factors into that concept. But the other reason that was making me laugh, and if you wanted to narrow this down to two characters, I was thinking of, you know, Mixyaz, like I was saying, I was thinking of him, but I was also thinking of Benjamin from Regular Show, who manager of the Park District. He's the gumball machine looking guy, because Mr. Mixyaz would drive Benjamin crazy because he would just do these goofy pranks. And like, we've seen how mad Benjamin gets at Mordecai and Rigby for just like slacking off and doing stupid stuff. But you bring in a fifth dimensional imp into the world, that's going to really gum things up. So I thought this one was really funny. This one, now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of like two really cartoony characters on both sides of the list, but I just thought this was a funny concept, so I wanted to include this one. So there you go.
Mr. Mixapitlick, who I'm pretty sure that's the actual pronunciation, and the reason I get that pronunciation is when they did the Mixapitlick episode on Flash and Supergirl on the CW, they had to say it verbally several times. And when you look at the animated series, I don't remember how they worded it when they did the animated series, but you said it like three or four different ways.
To be fair, I said it two different ways. I've always pronounced it Mixapitlick, which I think I've seen in writing. Like, I thought that's what I saw as an official pronunciation. And if you look at how it's spelled, it actually does look like that. Most people just say Mixapitlick, and I think it's just because that's easier. So I fluctuate between those, but Mixapitlick, Mixapitlick, whatever you just said for the Supergirl, show. I'm not sure. And it's one of those things where every comic book fan doesn't know the exact pronunciation, and we all feel stupid when
is
we say it.
Is
so.
It Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul? Like,
It's one of those. So.
Yeah. All right. So, in the realm of your Deadpool, Daffy Duck combo with the one person getting really annoyed with the other, this is the one I thought of that was the one person getting really annoyed with the other, but this would be like the annoyance, but at the same time there would be this like understanding each other. There'd be an understanding between the two of them, and it would just kind of work. But to watch them go on an adventure and deal with whatever the case may be, but Wolverine and Taz.
cool. Yeah, because
Wolverine would be irritated as hell with the Tasmanian Devil, but at the same time, at the end of the day, they're gonna get shit done, right? Like, that's why I laughed at that one. There's not much more to it than that. It's like they would get stuff done. They would, you know, they'd be good little traveling buddies, if you will. So
I think Wolverine would be like, I don't know what the heck is going on with this creature. But then once they actually had to like kick some ass, like once they're in a battle and Wolverine sees how like useful he is, he's like, oh, okay, no, this is my ride or die right here. Like, this is awesome. You know, this is my new teammate. So good call. This one, it's kind of weird. I don't have too much to say either, but a really fun concept, you know?
Yeah. All right, man. What do you got for me? Second to last pick.
Yeah, so this is one of my last minute picks, and this is one of the characters I really wanted to pick, but I didn't know how they fit into the thing. But I ended up going with Peacemaker because I really wanted to do Peacemaker. Like, I really like the James Gunn version of that character, and I was trying to think like who would Peacemaker cross over with, and the character that I ended up settling on, and I didn't think about it till right before the episode, I'm like, oh no, I have to pick this, it's too perfect. But again, this would be the James Gunn like DCU version, the John Cena version of Peacemaker, because if you watch the Peacemaker show, Peacemaker is inexplicably obsessed with 80s glam metal for some reason. the whole series, he's obsessed with glam rock, and there's not necessarily, I don't know if there's a good reason why, it's just part of his character, you know. And the series is filled with that kind of music in the background all over the place, and it's awesome. And it made me think, like, who's a cartoon character who has that level? Like, who has that, like, sort of rock star level? And the character I landed on is another character I've talked a lot on the show about. But I went with Dr. Roxo, the rock and roll clown from Metalocalypse. And this one is really funny because I don't know if Peacemaker would, I don't know if Dr. Roxo would drive Peacemaker crazy, or if Dr. Roxo would be like one of Peacemaker's heroes because he's so into glam metal that he would be like, actually be like honored to meet Dr. Roxo and stuff like that. But kind of the scenario I was thinking of is, Drew, have you watched Peacemaker season two yet?
Life happened and I fell off the wagon. So I need to get back in and I watched about half of it and life happened. Okay. So you know how the
multiversal stuff works, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So spoiler alert for Peacemaker, but Peacemaker's dad in the series has like his dad's like a superhero as well, or at least starts out as one and then maybe becomes a villain later on. I don't know. Maybe you got to watch to find out. But he has this closet that's kind of like this expansive, like never ending, like world. It's like this weird thing, like you open the closet and it's just like this never ending like storage space, and that's like his arsenal. That's where he keeps like all his armor and weapons and helmets and stuff for his superhero escapades. But in the second season, it's revealed that the closet is kind of like a multiversal hub, sort of. So like you can walk through the door and walk into that room, but you can keep walking and you can go to another door, and if you open the other door, that might be a closet door that leads to another universe. You know, it's like a multiversal gateway that his dad was using as like a storage unit, basically. And so like the concept I had is that Peacemaker will go into that sort of multiverse. And I don't know, I can't remember the official term for it, but Peacemaker would go through one of those doors and it would be the universe of Metalocalypse. So he would go through that door and maybe he'd hook up with Dr. Roxo, because Dr. Roxo is so close to the music he likes. And I don't know if they both would have to team up to take down Deathclock. Like maybe Deathclock has, you know, on some crazy reign of terror, like the band's gotten too big and they're just like gonna cause an apocalyptic event or something, and Peacemaker and Dr. Roxo have to stop that from happening. I'm not exactly sure how that would work, but that was kind of the vague sort of outline I had in my mind. But either way, this one would be really hilarious and really fun. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so good call. I had a feeling you were going to work Metalocalypse into this pick, into this list somehow. But when you started talking about the love of Rock, I was like, oh man, he's going to go with Murderface. I really thought that's what you were going to do. And then I was like, no, wait, he's going to pull out Regular Show and it's going to be Peacemaker and Muscle Man. Like,
hell yeah.
Like that. That's where I thought you were going with it, to be completely honest. But no, a good call with the Dr. Roxo. This makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Fun stuff.
All right. So my second to last pick, this is actually the one that I thought of originally, which made me think of the list, was, and this is very much one where it's just two characters are just going to team up together and a sense of mutual respect and take down the bad guys and, you know, punch someone in the face. But that'd be Batman. I had to get a Batman one in there somehow, but Batman and Darkwing Duck. There is not much to this like breakdown. It's like Batman and Darkwing Duck are going to team up and they're going to take down the bad guys. And I'm sure Batman will be annoyed to some degree, but at the end of the day, it's that mutual respect. Like, yeah, you know what you're doing. You got this, you know, that kind of thing. It's good to have someone like you out there, sort of thing, you know? So,
yeah, that'd be super fun. This is a really fun idea. It's kind of it was right there. I'm surprised I didn't think of this one, but really fun concept. And no, I think it would also be cool if you know, if Batman somehow commented, even if it was like in internal dialogue, and like how Darkwing Duck's costume kind of looks a little bit like the Gray Ghost and stuff like that. Like there's a lot of fun little tidbits they could, you know, homage to both series like that. So good stuff.
All right, man, what do you got for your last pick of the night?
Yeah, so my last pick is actually a Batman pick too. And like most of my list, I was kind of trying to find the more humorous picks to go with. But the character that I chose to cross over with Batman is Freakazoid, if you remember the classic animated series Freakazoid. And this is an awesome like superhero parody series from the
Freakazoid.
I don't know if it was
is amazing.
Yeah. It's like an awesome superhero parody series from like the early to mid 90s. I can't remember exactly when it came out, but it's just classic, like, it's almost like if you took like a Naked Gun level like style of humor and just adapted that into like a kid's superhero cartoon. Like, that's what it is. But Freakazoid is so funny. And the thing I was thinking about with this pick, because I don't know what the scenario would be, like Freakazoid and Batman have to team up to take down some villain or whatever it is. But I was just thinking about, this is another one where Freakazoid, like his crazy tongue-in-cheek antics and all the crazy gags, I could just see Freakazoid driving Batman crazy. Like, Batman just is getting pissed off at this guy, like, just acting a fool the whole, like, you know, the whole episode or the whole, like, comic book. Like, Freakazoid is just really getting on Batman's nerves. And then my idea was, like, at some point towards the end of, like, this special or whatever it is, Batman gets this vision in his mind, and he gets this glimpse of the 60s Batman series with Adam West. And whether that's, like, you know, a multiversal moment, like, if that's, like, another universe version of Batman, I don't know how that series works into official DC lore, but I think it's kind of a funny concept where, like, Freakazoid is just pissing Batman off, driving him crazy, but he kind of has to work with him on this specific task. And then he gets this vision in his head where it's like, oh no, there's a multiversal version of me that's pretty close to this guy, that's pretty silly and has a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor and a lot of goofy visual gags. And Batman goes into some weird, like, existential, like, self-loathing because of that. That was kind of my concept for it. I don't know how it all would all play out. But again, this was really just the humor that I saw in Freakazoid just annoying the crap out of Batman. So there you go.
That's awesome. Yeah. As soon as you said Freakazoid, my brain went, no, well, first off, totally with you, good call on the team up, but my brain went, Freakazoid should be hanging out with Booster Gold, right?
Yeah, there's another one, yeah.
Or Freakazoid and who was the other one I was thinking? Oh, Freakazoid and Deadpool would have been a really good team up too, in the realm of, like, looking at my list in hindsight. Yeah, but absolutely. No, good call with the Batman Freakazoid. All right. This last one, this is a very, very simple concept. This one, I wasn't going to save this one for last. I was going to save my Batman Darkwing Duck for last because it was the first one I wrote down. It's like, yeah, you know, that kind of was the inspiration for the list. This one made me laugh so hard when I thought of it. And it's just astounding. And it's going to make you go, yes, we need this. But I want to see Yosemite Sam and Deadpool. Not Deadpool. I'm sorry. Yosemite Sam and Lobo. That's the combo. Yeah. And just have those guys bounty hunting through the galaxy. They would literally be best of friends. It'd be amazing. Yosemite Sam and Lobo just cruising around on motorcycles with, like, heavy metal music playing in the background as they're just, like, riding through the galaxy.
No, it's sick. I like it.
Yeah, I misspoke and said Deadpool. That's what happens when you talk about other characters. But yeah, Yosemite Sam and Lobo. It's, like I said, simple concept, but, like, yep, they would totally, like, meet in a bar somewhere. And because they're hunting down the same thing, probably be a little bit of a, like, hold on, I'm after him, no, you're after him kind of moment. And then they team up and then it's like, yeah, it'd be sick.
I always like when you see like artwork of, like, Looney Tunes characters and
I felt like you dropped, but honestly, I think it was my headphones and not you. Hello.
It's all good. No, I was going to say, I always like when, am I good?
You're good. Yeah, you're good. Okay. You're good. Okay. We'll fix it in post.
I always like when you see artwork of like Looney Tunes and they have like the artist will make them look like all like post-apocalyptic or like sci-fi or something. So I feel like there could be like if this was a comic book, like Yosemite Sam and Lobo, I feel like there could be a lot of really cool moments like that. Like, you know, like Yosemite Sam walks into some like space bar or something like that, and he's got like this badass like post-apocalyptic like trench coat on, and you don't necessarily know who he is until he like tilts up his hat and then you see that it's Yosemite Sam. I'm also imagining, like, if this was a comic book, really fun, I can just picture Lobo riding on his motorcycle through space and then Yosemite Sam like sitting on the seat behind him but like faced backwards, and like Yosemite Sam has his guns out and he's just like, you know, just shooting off into the stars, like at like a, I don't know if there's a UFO chasing him or something like that. But I just picture like that's a really fun image, you know, just as a concept, like Yosemite Sam just like bouncing on the back seat of Lobo's motorcycle and not even like strapped in, just like barely holding on, but just kind of in a cool bouncy sort of Looney Tunes sort of way. So this one, yeah, this is a really fun concept. This is definitely one they should do, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. While you were talking, I do want to apologize, I bumped my microphone. So if you heard a weird noise, that's what it was. I didn't mean to do that.
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. So sorry, guys. I didn't mean to do that. Anyway, we didn't lose anything. I just bumped the microphone and I'm like, oops. In the long years I was doing that, I've never bumped the mic. But hey, Peter, your pick for the next week. What are we talking about?
Yeah. So we're getting off a string of weird episodes and I'm going to keep that string
kind of normal.
No, I'm going to keep the weirdness going.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. No, I thought of a weird list. I always like talking about like cosplay. I think it's a really fun topic. And our next list, I kind of wanted to delve back into that world again. Again, we're like in the summer, so it's convention season. So there's a lot of cosplay stuff going on. We're not quite at like San Diego Comic-Con and stuff, but there's still a lot of conventions going on all over the place. And we've done lists. We've done like our top five dream cosplays we would do with like an unlimited budget, our top five like dream group cosplays. And this is for our next week's list, I wanted to talk about like kind of a different topic we haven't discussed before. I wanted to talk about our top five dream low-key cosplays, because I always like the concept of a low-key cosplay. Like, you know, you just show up to work for the day and nobody really knows that you're dressed like Jason Bourne the whole time, you know, like you're just wearing something and you're thinking nobody really knows, but I'm Jason Bourne this whole time. Like, I like that idea. And like, maybe one person sees you in the low key cosplay and you're like, they're like, oh, you're, you know, so-and-so. I just thought that'd be a fun topic. This is another one that I would say sky's the limit if you want to do budget, like if you want to bring like nanotech into your concept and stuff. But in general, I don't know if we need to. I don't know if this is one that would need a big budget, but I just think this would be a fun topic. Like, what are the low key cosplays that you would want to do, if that makes sense?
I always like to think of this as everyday cosplay.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? Where you put on the shirt because you know it's from that movie, kind of. You bought it because it was from the movie, right? And then here you are, you know, you wear it as a regular, everyday kind of thing. Yeah, no, that's fun. So that's going to get into our psyche a little bit because, you know, I have a Batman complex, so why not?
Or it just gets into the obscure characters that you just kind of like to, you know, subtly dress as. But yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, this is going to take some thought. Yeah, it's going to take some thought. Anyway, that sounds cool. Let's see how it shakes out. But for right now, do you want to toss this episode in the can and kind of close it out for the night?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right, everybody, do us all a favor. Check out our website, top5report.com. There you'll find links to all of our social media, along with a link to our email, top5report@gmail.com. We are on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Amazon, Audible. You can subscribe to us in those places. If you do, you will not miss a single episode. You can also leave us a review. We love those 5 stars because we understand criticism because it helps us get better and it makes the words we say feel important. You can follow me personally on Twitter and Instagram at Drew3927. Peter, what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Ninja Pierre, and that's where I'll be revealing that adult Grogu's real name is Yoda.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Let's spoil it for everybody. Why don't we?
It's true. It's true. I swear.
Yeah.
100% accurate.
All right, everyone. For the Top 5 Report, I'm Drew.
I'm Peter.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.